You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Welcome to the second Detroit Soccer District podcast, where we talk all things soccer in the Detroit soccer landscape. Detroit Soccer District is a mini sports pitch located on Warren and Grand River, 5 minutes west of Wayne State University. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Siegel Deli, located in Commerce Township, Best Deli in Metro Detroit, Big Hit for catering parties, grad parties, office parties, and any type of gathering. This week, we'll be talking about refereeing in the youth game, small-sided versus 11v11 development, DIY at-home training techniques. This week, we have Marcos Pereira on the show, Keith Baldwin, and Tommy Kamanu. With that said, we'll go ahead and jump right into it to refereeing in the youth game. Keith, would you like to start us off? How should you react as a coach slash parent to poor referee performance?
You probably should get mad and shout at the referee and do all that sort of stuff. No, I mean, obviously the textbook answer is, hey, you should be grateful for referees and that you got to treat them with respect and all that, which technically I agree with. But when you get referees that have an adverse effect on the game, they do have to, you know, be accountable for their performance as well. And I think too often they don't want to even listen. There was an incident where I wanted just to talk to a referee at the end of a game very non-confrontationally about something, and they just wouldn't even have it. They didn't even want to talk. So, you know, that sort of thing. Whether you're a referee with an ego, you should be looking to get better rather than making decisions that, you know, can have a negative effect on the game. This is an important life lesson for players as well to, hey, look, sometimes decisions go against you, but...
Yeah. Do you think it was smart on the ref's part, though, after the game when emotions are high, not to talk?
Well, I wasn't in a high emotional state. I just wanted to talk to him about his decision. Right. But he had an argument with another coach, so maybe he just didn't want to do anything with anyone.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the first thing I thought about was they have all these boards and all these committees for coaches to address after the fact. So, yeah, I think maybe just to protect himself, he may not have thought that you're a danger to him, but who knows what can happen. You weren't emotional.
No, he just didn't want to talk. It was an ego thing. But rather than just that one specific incident, like, you know, they should be looking to get better. And if they're paid to do a game, they should put the effort in. And a lot of them do. A lot of them do. But then there's some that don't. Like, my daughter, she's 11, nearly 12. She's just done a referee certification. She hasn't done a game yet, but she's certified. And I just said to her, you know, as long as you run in and move in, I think that's fine.
That's right.
But when you see the kids, like, whether they're doing a 4v4 or a 7v7 game, and whether it's a young kid or an old person, and they just stand in the center circle, that drives me crazy.
Yeah. That's terrible.
That drives me crazy.
But, yeah, we need to respect them in the end. Of course, that... If walking around, I think, like you said, have the board meeting, have your league meeting, like in USL, we have our meetings. And I think it's the time for you to brought the issues that you have, and so they can address the referee committee to get better. I think the idea is when you do a complaint, is improve the quality of the refs, right? I think on the field, there is time to respect, and we do our mistake as a player, as a coach, right? We do bad decisions there. So we have to expect them to bad decisions too. We don't have VAR, right?
Yeah.
For us. So, and even VAR, they are doing bad decisions there.
Were you there last year, Marcos, when there was a altercation? You were in that game.
Yeah.
Altercation at the field. Obviously, the ref wouldn't talk then because everybody's going back and forth. He waited for everything to clear up. And then I'm not relating it to your case.
The game in West Bloomfield?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, where there's a big altercation.
Yeah.
And
the Battle of Bloomfield.
Yeah, the Battle of Bloomfield.
Yeah, that game that was tied, right? The 3-3.
Yeah, the 3-3 game. Yep, yep.
Yeah, but the referee acted good there, I think.
Yeah, he was professional.
In that game, yeah.
Yeah, but the thing is, he waited. He waited till all the smoke cleared.
Yeah.
And he wrote his report right after the fact. Yeah. And he didn't let anyone come to him, but he addressed it with, I think, unfortunately, the police were called, but, you know, I think that was a professional way to deal with it. And then it was dealt later by the committee.
Yeah, I think he handled the situation pretty good there.
Right, yeah.
So he didn't put more fire. Some refs sometimes put more fire, right? But
now, all right, let's put your daughter. Say she was older, because if an adult were to address her now at almost 12, it kind of it'd be ridiculous, right?
Probably what happened, though. You hear tuts and complaints, or just even just like, you know, oh, no, you got the throwing wrong, or you got this. You hear it from parents. You
right.
know, they, you know, they get way too caught up in it.
Yeah.
You know.
So if you were a referee, how would you want to be addressed?
By who?
Both coach and parents. And or parents.
I would expect the coach to have a better, you know, a more knowledgeable dialogue. I wouldn't expect them to complain about everything. And if they were, then they lose credibility. A bit like the boy who cried wolf, right? He was just complaining all the time. But if they have one issue and they want to bring it up at the end of the game, I would have no issue with that. And as for parents, I think you've got to be able to understand that there's a balance between being involved in their kid's game and maybe just following it and doing self-commentary. And even if they say, oh, the throw-in's wrong or whatever, I wouldn't really care that much. But if then it starts to get to a level while they're shouting out to the kids, being a nuisance to the other parents, being, you know, rude to me in terms of if I was the ref and constantly getting negative feedback from them, then, yeah, I would stop the game and go and address them, give them a warning. And then if they wanted to keep going, I'd send them off or make the coach go take them off.
So during the match, is the best for the coach and or captain maybe to address it?
What, parents?
No, referees.
Well, it depends on decision. I mean, you know, look, it's a kid's game. It's not necessarily, you know, if there's a penalty given, it's given. If it's wrong, it's wrong. But if they want to come at the end and say, I disagree with that and state their point, like, depends on decision. There was one game where we were in the tournament and our player did a tackle on the 6-yard line and won the ball. And as they nipped in and won the ball, so our defender got the touch, and then our keeper dived on it in the 6-yard area. And the linesman started flagging, and he was wanting the ref to award an indirect free kick for a back pass. But that's obviously not a back pass when you make a tackle and then the keeper just dives on it right by your goal line.
Right.
Right. So, yeah. You know, and then to be fair, the ref, our team was losing. It was the last minute. It was like 3-0. You know, the ref would have given it, but because it was 3-0 in the last minute, they didn't. So that sort of thing, if that was a game-winning decision, then I wouldn't have gone up to that linesman who was probably 12 or 13 mad at the end, but I'd have tried to, hey, explain why that wouldn't be a back pass.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know,
that's the worst. Like, it gets subjective. It's like, oh, I'm not going to give this. You guys are winning 3-0. You don't need another goal. Or I'm not saying that was the case, but
You could tell that's what made the referee not give it.
Right.
You know? Because we were complaining from the sideline because, like, you seriously can't give that for a back pass. Are you trying to give a back pass there?
If it's a foul or if it's a handball, it is what it is. Just call it objectively.
Yeah.
The game can I
thought he was going to say
game already have a lot of
gray areas.
Oh, gray areas for interpretation, right? For some ones, you have to be straightforward to, like you said, be objective as much as you can. It's already too much open for interpretation there.
What is college like? Who addresses it in college, Tommy?
I mean, typically you want your captain to address it. At halftime, if there's something that you see that's happening, you may go up to the ref and say, I'm seeing some of this. What do you think? And they'll say, oh, I'll look for it or that. And, I mean, you can't really control every player, though. But most of the time, my team was pretty good about it. Nobody was really getting on the ref about anything. I was captain of my team my senior year, so I think I did a pretty good job.
So you just went up to the ref? And
At halftime. I mean, a lot of times the ref will say, if there are any complaints, I'll only be talking to the captain. And so they only speak with the captain and be like, they'll either call the captains if the game is getting rough, say to talk with your team, or if someone has a complaint, I'll be like, hey, just leave it. I'll talk to the ref at half. And it's usually gets you a lot further.
Go a lot on the coach too, right? I don't know about college, but you see this in the pro games that the team reflects the coach on the bench much of the time, right? The teams that complains more, you look, the coach style is same, right? So coach, that mentality to the training, the talking with the players, I think is how we educate the players, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What are your players like?
Angels.
Are they just like?
To your point, you're right. If you've got a coach barking on the sideline the whole time, it's a distraction to everyone and the players. You don't want to create that excuse mentality of, you know, it's the ref's fault. Or we had a bad ref today.
Oh yeah.
You know, if you have a bad ref, I mean, you have a bad ref. But you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, the topic in general, I just find that fine line. If you do have to protect the refs, you do have to thank them for being the refs because we need refs to have games. But on the other hand, I hate sometimes some refs who have that ego who just like they're untouchable and they walk around better than everyone else. You know, that's just that's the annoying part.
Tommy, tell him, Tommy.
What do you mean?
Tell him about the penalty. Tell him about the penalty, please.
Oh, we don't need to get into every single scenario.
This guy called me. He went on for 40 minutes.
You're Brazilian. You probably did dive.
I didn't dive. It wasn't me. I wasn't involved. I was not involved. Tommy was the...
All right, we'll just make it quick. I mean, this team was playing a really high line, and we were up 2-1. We weren't having the most possession because they were pressuring a lot, but we did get a nice pass on the other side. And I took a long touch forward, and I was behind their entire line. And I'm right on the line of the box shooting the ball, and this guy just destroys me. Why my arm is out and I'm shooting? And he just wrecks me. I'm bruised. I have a bruised rib for like a week and a half. And I would go flying like 5 yards. And then the ref comes up, and I'm the last man. Ref comes up and just gives him a yellow card. And I was so mad. I was so mad, and I got up and I just told him, like, I'm usually not yelling at refs, but I just told him, he was like, you're the biggest moron in the world.
That was effective.
I was thinking about walking off the field. It was just so absurd. But this is like, I understand is not going to be like a more regimented game as like a, it was just an indoor league run by Total Sports, so it's not like
just indoor. I mean, they try not to give reds, I'm sure.
Yeah,
but that scenario, not to change topic too much, but and this is maybe more of a law change, but I hate it when, say, you're right, like you're taking a shot and you just get your shot off and you get destroyed, which would be like a foul, right? And let's say your shot goes over a bar, why there's no advantage there. That should be a penalty, but no refs ever call it in the pro game, right? Because you took your shot, and even if like a split second later you're downed by the keeper or you're whatever, I don't understand why they don't give that as a foul. It's only an advantage if it goes in, right?
Right.
For me, that interpretation is like the side sliding sometimes. The guy, they say, oh, the guy touched the ball first, but man, the guy really go to touch whatever he could get their ball player.
The Ramos tackle.
Yeah.
Getting a glancing blow of the ball and then destroying the guy.
That doesn't matter anymore, right? It's about the follow through. That's something we would say 10 years ago. I got the ball first, but now if you get the ball and destroy a player, it's not quite the same.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They should do it. Wasn't it in Brazil that they did that? Didn't they like behead a linesman or something? Someone stabbed and then they went back and got the linesman. The linesman stabbed a player in rural Brazil, and then the whole village came out and beheaded him. I'm going to Google it. I know that happens.
That's like Division 4 or something.
Probably.
Only in Division 4 you get beheadings. That's
Oh, yeah.
Then you go too far. See how then.
Next week. I'll Google that for next week.
All right. Cool. All right. We talked about, I think, there's so much on reffing that we can talk about, and I'm sure people that are tuning in have some comments. Yeah, very sensitive topic.
2 hours talk.
Yeah, we can talk about this forever. But I wanted to get into the small-sided verse 11v11 development. I've talked to many players about this, and you see it all the time. I grew up playing on the streets, and then you see it transferable into 11v11 sides. Players are good, you know, in tight spaces, but, you know, does that really translate? Does that develop the player really? So what do you guys think about that?
Everything that I see is kind of the trend in Europe, at least the coach do that. It's more sided games. But sometimes I miss that the field is big, right? And positioning and the running, and there is other thing that, I don't know, I think still need to have a mix. But I see a lot of value in the small side. It's, even it's easy to manage the practice.
A mix of when? Yeah. It's pretty age-specific, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I agree.
I mean, they have a structure in the U.S. U11, U12 is 9v9. U10, U9, 7v7, before that's 4v4. U13 and above is 11v11. You know, I think they've pretty much got the age brackets right, because, you know, otherwise it's just a kick-and-run game, or big, powerful kids could dominate. You know, at least when it's more size-appropriate, you know, if more people are getting touches, it encourages the skill work. And then You can do optional small-sided with the futsal and things like that. But, I mean, it's set up for a reason. I mean, are you trying to say that, you know, 11v11 for a 10-year-old is better?
No, I'm not trying to say that. I'm just trying to figure out which is better for development.
I think what I understand in your question was more passing already in the, let's say, high teenage or already college or amateur or pro. I think that's how I understand his question. And I, when you said, 11v11, small sided, more touch on the ball, the players can develop better the skill. That's one thing that I agree, that advantage in the small field, that in the big field, when you practice in the big field, 11v11, it's like a game. You don't touch too much on the ball, right?
Right.
You don't have too much touch. Score that sometimes you need to have that to have the space, have the formation set up.
Yeah. The only thing to me that small side it doesn't provide is field awareness, positioning.
Yeah.
Those two.
Very important.
Yeah.
It's important.
Very important.
It's important.
I see some guys that are very good small sided, and I see them in 11v11 games. And it's, when they get the ball, they're pretty good, but like, depends on the scenario. A lot of times it looks like they're just lost out there. They can have nice touches, but it's just like, they just seem disoriented there.
And vice versa.
But you in the college, tell me how it is in the, there is probably a lot of talking to between coach and players, not only in the field, but kind of talking presentation, something like this, showing how to position the field too, right? Or not too much.
We go, it's mainly defensive. We do have offensive orientation kind of stuff, but mainly defensive formation is more drilled. And if we're talking about 11v11, are we talking about development for older players that are already playing 11v11?
Player period.
Okay.
Oh, but then go inside what he said, I think then,
What did you say?
Well, I just, you know, you can't blanket the whole topic like that, because you got kids. You can't put a bunch of 7-year-olds on 11v11 field.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you're right.
It's madness.
Madness.
But, you know, you look at some of the best futsal players in the world. Is it that Ricardo, I think his name is, from Brazil, right?
He's from Portugal.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't play an outdoor team, right? Mm-mm. Not that I know of. So, you know, obviously, or you think of, you know, that if you ever watch that And One basketball tour, a lot of the street basketball players, very few of them ever make it to the NBA. I think one or two have maybe made it.
Right.
You know, it's just,
So
if you specialize and just stick to one game, one small sided, then you might be very good at the tricks, but then you got the vision, like you said, that you're not gonna get. But, you know, you make it as a mixture. And then with fields, like, I know a lot of the clubs here, and even those with academies and whatever, your top academy teams, they never, or very rarely, have a full 11v11 field to themselves for training.
They're training
in a quarter or a half of a field. So you have to do a lot of, you know, small-sided stuff.
All right, that goes to the next part of that. So Detroit has better potential to field small-sided or or 11v11? Should we focus, like, as a, if we're developing a style here to take out, to put out there, you know, should we focus on the small side or 11v11? As a player develops, obviously past the age of like 7v7 or 7 year olds.
Like 15.
15, yeah, yep.
I don't know. Go back to the same thing. Is the mix? If your question is like what, develop fields on the parks 11v11, yeah, have it small fields or what the idea? Oh,
yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. It's just doing both. I mean, I think Detroit has a style. You look at a lot of the top teams that come out that win, you know, national championships and, you know, ECNL academy stuff. It's quick passing movement, you know, and quick, good first touch. And a lot of that gets developed through the indoor training. And, you know, futsal's a part of it these days, but just indoor training in small spaces, quickness of play, that all gets developed in small sided stuff. Mm-hmm. When you do get a chance to have half a field, maybe a team's not there one night and you have a half field, that's the times you're working a bit more on maybe a defensive shape or an attacking, you know, yeah, attacking play. But most of the time, it's speed of play, rondos, that sort of thing, mm-hmm, and or different setups.
Yeah, we get Drew Ducker out here. I'm sure he would be on the small-sided side. He's like, yeah, total development's all small.
Yeah, but yeah, you see small-sided in a futsal, there is an end path because you can play, you know, for the Mud Puppies in Ann Arbor or whatever. But, you know, it's to enhance and to make your game better as an outside player.
Yeah.
Really, futsal comes in as
well. Yeah, you're right. So, like, for Detroit, Detroit's a big city, right? But it has space. It's considered a big city, but it has space to facilitate 11v11, no problem. So I think, you know, it'll be beneficial for us to utilize that space. Not us right now, just Detroiters in general. Utilize the space here and, you know, see a pitch every block or every two blocks or something.
Well, there's fields, you know, around, but until you get a club that's based down here, I know Canton are trying to do that partnership with Detroit City, mm-hmm, but then I don't necessarily think they're going to have many games down here or outdoor games because they're going to have the field house. Until you get like a Nationals downtown Detroit or someone that's based here and then parents from the suburbs are forced to bring their kids down for games at an outdoor field in Detroit, it's going to be, you know, hard to have that sort of thing going on.
There are games down here. I mean, they're youth games. I've seen youth games.
Yeah, I mean,
there's
Powell and that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm. At Keyworth last year, I trained there in the summer. I'd see, I'm not sure which club, but there'd be games there. And
Hamtramck City, yeah, probably. Hamtramck City
Warriors,
FC or something like that, yeah.
I think Warriors, yeah. There are little games like that, but it's definitely not as extensive as out in the suburbs.
Yeah, until you can get a big club that's competing on like the leagues that other clubs will have to come play. Not even ECNL, but you know, just a club that's got teams in Division One of the age groups, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's a decent standard and there's, you know, a field with, whether it be like a little clubhouse, you know, or just toilets and a cafeteria. It's just somewhere that's like a hub, you know.
I mean, I would say Detroit Soccer District.
Well, that's 4v4 field, right?
5v5, 7v7, depends on how big you are.
We've got to grow the district.
That's right. But from a culture standpoint, I see small-sided developing here even better than, you know, 11v11, if you will.
Well, it's always easier to get a small-sided game going if there's not a strong organization of clubs there. If you're doing pickup, a lot of the times you're going to be doing small-sided. Even if you have enough players, most of the time small-sided works out better if you're just doing pickup.
Yeah.
The positions are more fluid. You don't get into arguments of having to be stuck on defense if you're not a defender. A lot of times, I mean, defenders aren't really coming out as much to the pickup games.
What position do you usually play, Keith?
Right mid.
Okay. For the legendary UK Royals, you play right mid?
Yeah, a bit like Rooney these days. So I drop a bit further back, you know, and quarterback the team. No, right mid. You know, centre mid, right mid. Wherever. Then I come off, get a breather.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. What is it? Over 40? You guys play them, Marcos?
Yeah, we're going to Eagles, right?
No.
Royals.
UK Royals. Division one,
oh, Marcos.
Yeah, far away from Division One, man.
Anyway, so
I can even put the guys practicing the small field. Don't never have enough. People don't want to practice.
Yeah, people don't want to practice, man. What's up with that? They just want to show up to the games and that's it. But anyways, so why are you laughing at that?
I want to practice. I love practice.
Yeah, right. I like practice too. It's unbelievable that people, oh no, I hate practicing, man. It's fun.
It's the weather. Blame it on the weather. So, well, to that point, so, you know, there's training techniques that you can do at home. Like, do you guys know of any or went through it as you're growing up? Like, DIY home training.
Well,
techniques.
I love the passing off a ball. I was, you know, London's wall ball champion. Have you ever played wall ball? That's
what
game.
Is it? You draw chalk?
No, you just pick a random bit of a wall. You know, there's normally like a, you know, like a section or a couple of pillars, maybe 15 feet apart. Then you have one touch or sometimes two touch, and you have to hit it against the wall. And you know, if you miss, then you're out, or you know.
Oh man, your dad got your mom gonna love you.
Played in the alleys across Europe.
Yeah,
it's great.
We did that on fence. We
didn't bounce very well off a fence.
Well, it wasn't wall ball. You would get like say three people. We'll get Tommy versus, we'll do 1-on-1 and then someone's in the goal. We'll do that all the time when I was growing up. You ever play that, Marcos?
Oh no, what I did in, I have in my backyard.
Do it. Say it. Say it.
In Brazil? I love Nelinho. Do you remember Nelinho?
No.
Was one of the best free kickers that we have. He kicked with the three fingers here outside and the ball always do a curve, man. I was always trying to practice that scene in the backyard, but there was a big door glass. I don't know how that scene ever broke.
You weren't shooting hard enough.
All the time, man. Have all the balls marked in every play.
What? Yeah. Your parents would let you do that? Oh my God.
Wall ball. Never heard of that.
You know the wall ball? Kicking the ball against the wall.
Yeah.
Taking turns.
Ball, uh-huh. Yeah.
I mean, I just did that with myself. I just hit it off the ball with myself.
Yeah, if you challenge on it, it's, you know, it's fun. Plus, you know, you're trying to judge where the ball's going. So you're moving. And you go, if you play one touch wall ball, it works in your first touch, hitting the bouncing ball, angles.
Yeah.
There's a lot of strategy to wall ball.
You grew up in the concrete jungle, that's why.
Oh, but today?
Some green spaces around as well.
Yeah, he's from London.
I have a playlist now on YouTube with a lot of drills to do inside the home.
Like what?
Oh, they have like you move the ball feet to feet, move the ball, bring to 1 foot, change foot. They have like tons of video that you find there. Like same thing that we are talking here, right?
Yeah, so there's definitely ways to train at home.
As a kid, mainly, I mean, by myself, I wasn't doing as much. I would juggle sometimes if the coach, like there was a coach assignment or a challenge, I would juggle by myself. But mainly, me and my brothers would play just soccer in the house, staircase, and then an opening.
Yeah, break
we
some
would
glasses.
Do that. We broke a lot. We broke a lot of things. It wasn't. Then once you break something, you hide it and you wait. You know, wait until they find out about it. But we're doing 3v3. But lately, 3v3, we'd have not 3v3. 1v1v1, 1v1v1. We would have 3 goals.
The World Cup.
No, we'd have 3 goals going on.
Okay.
And so you'd have to, you know, have your angles down. And if somebody's leading, then maybe you team up, you know, form alliances. That was pretty fun. And lately I've just, my little brother would do dribbling in his room all the time. He'd just be dribbling around in his room and, you know,
hitting a full-size ball?
Full-size ball, yeah.
Yeah, sometimes I spend the day with the ball. Every time that I go in the house, I go with the ball.
Yeah, I got superstitious. I was like, oh, I got to sleep with this ball. But I tell you what, every time it comes back to me, I say the ball loves me. You guys probably didn't understand.
Whatever gets you through the day.
Yeah. The ball's always coming to me and like, oh, how does the ball stay on your foot? It loves me. I used to treat it with respect, and I used to sleep with it. Literally, sleep with the ball at night. What my brother used to say, put the ball next to your pillow at night so you can build a relationship.
Yeah, osmos?
Yeah,
you're gonna learn soccer by osmosis.
Yeah, yeah.
But then you think of that. You seen those TV ads for that, like, but we know how you have that dancing game where it's like move left and right.
Oh yeah,
and it looks a bit gimmicky to me, that for the ball. You know, it's like the smart ball. It's yellow. You know, seen those ads on TV?
No, I've seen it.
I haven't seen those.
It's like if the screen then says, you know, like right, drag, drag. You got to quickly shift, drag.
It's like
drag,
dance revolution for soccer.
That's like robot training. Why are you thinking for yourself in those situations?
Exactly.
They're negating the imagination in that, I feel like.
Well, think about drills. Drills, you do constant drills to get it, like osmosis.
Yeah.
So when it comes game time, you already have that body pattern.
The idea of the drill is your body incorporate that thing as a natural thing, like walking, right?
Right.
You don't think to walk.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of the drill is that, right? For any kind of skill, right?
Drill.
That you want to develop in your life is
multiplication tables.
Yeah.
Hmm. You drill that in. Yeah, so what do you think about that, Keith? You like it or no?
Nah. Gimmicky, innit?
Yeah.
Why is it gimmicky?
Well, it's just like I said, I think you learn by just by playing and, you know, doing your own things. Just, it's like when I first came to the States, when I was doing camps, I had to sell that soccer pal thing. You know, when you have a little bag of a rope and you have to put the ball in it.
You had to sell that?
I had to sell that at the soccer camps, yeah. We had a certain amount we had to sell every week. I had to, like, hawk to the kids and the parents for, like, $12 or something. It was part of what we had to do for the summer camps.
Yeah.
But, I didn't believe in it. I mean, what are you really learning by just kicking the ball in the bag and then it comes back to your foot? And same thing with this new thing, even though it's a bit more complex and maybe you are, you know, it's not. It's nothing new that you can learn or no combos that you can do. You can't do out in the park by yourself. You don't need to be staring at a screen, you know.
Yeah.
Just get out and play with someone and work on the moves.
Yeah.
Especially be out in the parks much better, but unfortunately here we have winter, right?
Yeah. But you could, you know. Yeah. I ain't paying money for that anyway.
Yeah. And it engages your imagination more than you following directions, and that is more useful on the soccer field. If you're imagining a scenario for yourself, and then it's a lot easier to transfer that to the game than I'm following this order that this screen or this ball is giving me.
Yeah. But other thing that you can, if you talk about do at home, that I feel that people don't do too much is really watch the game and pay attention to the game. Analyzing the game, record, go back, try to understand what people is doing there.
Definitely.
That maybe is the best thing that you can do when you're home, is really watch the game without siding any team there. Just watch the game to learn.
Definitely.
Yeah. But what would you know to look for? What would you know if?
You look for, get one player, your position, you play what, forward, get a forward that you identify your style. Let's say you identify with Lewandowski, for example. Then watch him, how he moves. Score that the camera don't help too much because it's not focused on him all the game, right? It's not like being the stadium. But you look how he moves, the time that he moves. You learn things.
Mm-hmm.
You learn things about formation. Get before the game, try to understand, oh, this team going to play what, 4-3-3? Okay, what the forward doing the 4-3-3 here? Because then you start to understand, because sometimes it's hard. You go and talk with players and you talk, oh, let's play 4-4-2. But when in the end you see the team playing 4-3-3, because people
talk about formation. Always talks about formation.
Yeah. It's learn a little bit what to do in the field, right? And understand more your style also sometimes. You look.
Yeah, but that's got to be you got to be a certain age, like a 10 or even a 14-year-old can't watch a game and, you know, keep their concentration that long to study it, you know.
And I could see that difference on
10 minutes, but not a whole game.
My son, when he play soccer, he didn't watch games, and I saw friends that watch game understand much more the game, have much more vision and what you do in the game. And my son was just there, like, looked like having fun. And the other player that watched more the game, there was two that was pretty into that. They really understand the what to do there.
But isn't that the point, to have fun?
Oh, no, yeah, have fun, yeah, yeah. Of course.
I agree you have to be a certain age for some of the tactical things. Yeah. Like after I was really playing a lot of defense in college, I was watching how they decide to drop their line, when they do, and all that kind of stuff. Rewinding, seeing like the distance and the distance between the player with the ball and the first defender who's addressing the ball, and how the line adjusts to how much pressure is on the ball and who's on the ball. And I thought that stuff was that was really helpful for me in developing that awareness of when to drop and who I'm guarding, like how far to be away from them. But I do think it's useful as a kid for certain things like dribbling styles. I think that people absorb that kind of stuff a lot more if they're watching. They yeah. see a certain person dribbling a certain way, and I think they kind of absorb that stuff, not through like analytical yeah. kind of thing, but just through seeing it and repeating it or trying to do it themselves.
Yeah, and the kids until certain age, of course, that they're not going to have that interpretation of the game. But when you're getting older, like, and you say, oh, more like if you're in the 16, 17, you start saying, oh, I want to try a professional career, then that's the time that you really have to get more involved on these things, right? Understand more the game and study mm-hmm. more the game. It's not only yeah. about the technique, but the
You guys the been to the games at the Big House?
You know, no.
Yes.
Yeah. I wonder, it'd be interesting, I wonder what percentage are really, because you get a great view there. You can watch the runs, you know, off the mm-hmm. ball and that. But there's probably a fraction of 1% that are truly watching a game like that. You know, everyone's there, just having a more party atmosphere. But
play soccer.
No, yeah, no. We just talk what more we can do sideways than the practice and play the game, right? When you talk here, we're not going to say that, oh, you be in front of the TV, going to learn how to play soccer. No, you watch and you go there and go in your practice, talking with your coach.
What you're saying, most effective at-home training techniques. I mean, most people learn by doing. I mean, you may watch a clip or a YouTube clip or something on any social media of a new move that, you know, any player does, whether it's Messi, Ronaldo, or just whoever. Mm-hmm. You know, people are copying it. You know, like my team, Crystal Palace, I'll give a ding for that.
Yeah.
If you remember, actually about 4 years ago, Yannick Bolasie against Spurs, he did a move against Eriksen where he like swept the floor and then he rolled the ball and it flicked up over Eriksen. Mm-hmm. And that's been played a ton. And, you know, people have been trying to copy it. And just like little things like that, just, you know, you can watch, you know, rather than a whole game and analyze, but you see a little clip on YouTube, then go try and... Uh-huh.
Yeah, then you go for two. Yeah. Today's a lot of tools there.
Yeah, something
I'll
I like
do the move against you, Joe. I'll show you.
Yeah, yeah, please do it. Please do it. Yeah, something I like is as a forward, if somebody's whoever sends the ball up, and it happens every time, it's so obvious. This is like one of those you learn from doing. Someone's going to win the ball. Most likely, defenders don't bring it down and try to, you know, play out the back. They just head it out. And all you got to do is take two or three steps back, anticipate, and then it's yours. You can watch. I've seen that done in pro as well, but that's something I learned doing and then saw it in the pros.
Yeah. And sometimes going that, like a corner defender. Kick. What I hate in the corner kick, whatever, if you are attacking or defending a corner kick, when I see teams that don't have a guy on the top of the box, not top of, a little bit more out of the box there, to get the rebound. You see teams like...
This is MUSL Division 3, though, right?
No. I already saw teams in the pro doing this thing and say... Man, come on, where's the guy for the rebound to try to score a goal from the rebound, or a guy from the rebound to defend that ball and let the attacking guy get that? I see people doing that mistake even at the pro.
How do you learn that at home?
Oh, not home, no.
How do you learn that at home? Yeah. Yeah, what do? You go in your backyard and position yourself and imagine?
That's not at home.
I've seen that, though. People, there's a new training technique out there that you don't use a ball. You, imagine yourself doing it.
I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, it's kind of, to me, it's
Tai Chi Chuan
maybe
soccer.
Good for once a year. Maybe once a year do that.
It's a Tai Chi Chuan soccer, right?
Shaolin soccer. All right. no, but yeah, I've seen it. I've seen it done in groups too. Like, positioning wise, they'll set it up and say, I'm passing it to you. Let's do basketball for a second. I pass it to you. You receive it. And then it's like you have the ball in your hands. It's so weird. What are you going to do with that unless it's actually there?
Yeah, I don't know. You're off on a tangent here.
That's imagination. I was relating it back to, at home techniques that you could do. And I've seen that done.
Just gonna have a ball at your feet. Just gotta do touches, you know.
Touches, yeah.
Get in the backyard, play against your dog. Dogs are good defenders.
Yeah, that's true. All right. Let's move on. So let's get into the bonus. You guys have any comments about Champions League coming up?
Yeah, that's what I bring here. Let's do this thing.
Bold quick predictions. Round,
quick round, because we're gonna meet in 2 weeks and the quarters will be over, right?
Yeah.
Let's see. Liverpool and Porto.
Liverpool.
Yeah, Liverpool, this one. Tottenham and City?
I'm actually going to go for Tottenham to cause the upset.
Oh.
City.
Yeah, I'll go with Tottenham as well.
You know, they play 3 times in 2 weeks. So they got a league game in the middle of their 2 Champions League. And I just think that was probably the worst draw City could get. I just see it. City are favourites, but I think Tottenham could upset them.
Yeah, I go with City.
Congrats to the English teams out there.
And so yeah,
they're like it used to be.
Ajax and Juventus. It's crazy.
It would be close, but yeah, money's on Juventus there.
Yeah,
Juve.
I pick Juve only because one single factor. not one. They have multiple factors, but.
Yeah, I think it'll be Juve. I would like to see Ajax passing, but I think it'll be hard.
I think
their
defense will have learned from.
Yeah.
The Juve's defense will have learned from Real Madrid's.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
And United and Barcelona?
Barcelona. I mean, you know, everything says Barcelona could win, but can Solskjaer put out some magic? I'm going to say United will win one of those legs, but will lose overall.
That's what always happens with Barcelona.
I think Barca wins.
Yeah, that's what always happens.
Maybe 2-1 at Old Trafford to United, and then maybe a 3-1 to Barcelona at the Nou Camp, something like that.
Barcelona always provides false hope for these teams.
I know, but
Barcelona is kind of, the season is... They are leading easily, the Spanish, but Atletico Madrid, both Madrid teams not playing that great, right? I don't feel too much confidence in the Barcelona team, too.
Yeah.
But I think they're going to barely pass here, because United also...
So is there a bet on this? Because we're all the same apart from my Tottenham. So if I win, what do I get from you three?
We'll talk about it.
All right.
Well, okay. Thank you for tuning in. Detroit Soccer District, home to a mini sports pitch located on Warren and Grand River, 5 minutes west of Wayne State. Again, thank you to Siegel's Deli.
Yeah, maybe you'll cater a corned beef sandwich from Siegel's Deli if I win.
Yes. All right, Keith. That's for Keith right there, Keith Baldwin. He's putting money. We're going to get him Siegel's Deli.
Homemade soups as well. All the best.
All right. Thank you for tuning in. Catch us next week.